as you point out in your book, The Art of the Turnaround, costs go up, but theaters have but so many seats, and arts administrators thus sit at the horns of a dilemma.
Absolutely. There's a growing gap between income and expenses. Expenses go up very fast because we don't improve productivity very easily in the arts, but our real earned income level is fixed by the number of seats we have. And so every year that gap gets larger and larger, and our challenge as arts administrators is to fill that gap.
Well, I would think, especially during these economic times, that reality becomes more stark.
It's absolutely true, because there's less money to be given to the arts. And so all of a sudden we see our contributed income, which was a big help in filling that gap, falling. And also for many organizations, the earned income, the level of ticket sales goes down as well. And so it becomes harder and harder in this environment. But where you decide to address and how you fix that and how you fill your gap is crucial in these times more than ever.
Many arts organizations feel as though they're really stuck. And what they can do is they can raise their ticket prices, they can cut down on productions, they can create smaller productions that will cost less.
Mm-hmm. Each of those is problematic. When you keep raising your ticket prices, as we've done for the last 30 years in the arts, more than any other industry, you start to disenfranchise whole groups of people. And then we're surprised when people say the arts are irrelevant. They're not irrelevant, they're just too expensive. And when you make your productions cheaper or do fewer, less work, you're not competing well for the resources that do exist. If there's less money to go around in the arts, we have to compete harder, not less hard. My solution is to do really interesting work, market very, very aggressively, and really try and compete for the money that does exist. I believe in the arts, the solution is always increasing revenue and very rarely decreasing costs.
Well, I would also imagine that it's a far greater impact on new work, because when economic times are tight, the tendency of a board is to go for tried and true.
You're right. And it's not just the board. It's also staff and it's also the press. I read so often now is the time to do accessible work. Now is the time to play it safe. The problem is when you play it safe, if everyone plays it safe, we're all boring and funders will go elsewhere. And we're finding that the more interesting work is the work that draws more audience and draws more funders. Just this past spring, we did a very big festival dedicated to the arts of the Arab world. Not accessible, not safe. We sold 92% of the tickets. We raised more for that production, that festival, than we have for any other production in our history.
And how did you do that?
We did it by taking our time. I'm a very strong proponent of doing your artistic planning 5 years in advance for your big projects. That's not to say that every project is planned that far in advance or that you can't make change. But I believe that a project of that scope really requires a great deal of time to get it right, to think through the art you want, to negotiate the contracts, to negotiate the visas, to do the fundraising and the marketing. And if you take your time and do it thoroughly, you can raise larger amounts of money and you also can sell more tickets. And that's what we did with that festival.
Can you talk about some of the signature programs that have been created during your tenure here at the Kennedy Center, please?
Absolutely. Well, I think the first one that people would point to would be the Sondheim celebration that we did in 2002. That was important for the Kennedy Center because we returned to producing our own theater. We hadn't done that in 14 years. And so for the first time in 14 years, we were actually creating our own theater productions. It was a very large-scale project. It was a project that I had been thinking about for over a decade. And it was a project with a particular point of view. We were saying there are myths about Stephen Sondheim's work. We wanted to dispel those myths by doing essentially a museum exhibition of his works. You could come in a weekend and see three different productions. And through this process, we believe we discovered and uncovered a lot of myths about his work, and we think the audience responded very well.
That was your first, but hardly your last.
There have been many others. Our big festival of China, which was, I believe, 4.5 years ago, which brought 800 performers from China here in a very large look and comprehensive look at the arts of China. Everything from having the Terracotta Warriors upstairs to amazing dance and theater and ballet. And we really were trying to do a big international festival. We had done international festivals before. I wasn't happy with the scope of them, and we wanted to do something very, very substantial. So that's a second big project. There have been so many. I'm very proud of a project we did, Masterpieces of African-American Choreography. I thought it was really important to trace the history of African-American choreography. And so we did a week where we brought 16 dance companies here and really looked at how African-American choreography migrated and matured and changed over the course of almost 100 years. It was really a spectacular week here. August Wilson's 20th Century. August Wilson wrote 10 plays. Each play takes place in a different decade of the 20th century. No one had ever done the plays together in the order in which they take place. And so we were the first to do that. And we had a month of staged readings, bringing together all the great actors who had done his work. And we saw the 20th century emerge in 30 days. We saw 10 plays. It was just astonishing. Something totally different. We did a festival of country music. I felt that no one was really taking country music seriously. And I thought it was important to look at it in a serious way. And we had a wonderful festival at 5 years ago of country music. We had a festival of a cappella singing. A cappella singing is really important because it's one of the very few art forms that hasn't gotten homogenized, meaning when you look at most art forms across geographic boundaries these days, the people who do ballet the same in Russia now as they do in England, as they do in France, as they do in the U.S., and people play symphonic music the same in China as they do in Los Angeles, as they do in Moscow. But every country has its own sound of a cappella singing. And so we wanted to showcase that. And so we had a cappella groups here from Mexico and from South Africa and from Bulgaria and from the U.S. and from England and from the Czech Republic. And it really was astonishing to hear the differences.
Michael, can you talk about what goes into the decision-making process?
It's a long process, and it's an arduous process. First comes an idea. And the idea can come from all kinds of people. They don't certainly all come from me. But people tell me ideas, and sometimes they just spark in my mind. I can see what this might look like. So the first is to say, on its own merits, does this project really make sense? And could it be beautiful or wonderful or enlightening? But then one has to put these projects together into a season. The Kennedy Center does 2,000 performances a year. So I have to think about my season as a portfolio rather than just as separate pieces that might or might not fit together in terms of audience appeal, fit together in terms of economics. And so I have to really balance these. And so I'm working 5 years in advance, and when a great idea happens, I'm putting it in place. I'm putting it in a particular year where I think it has a constellation of fellow projects that make for a great, interesting season. The wonderful thing about the Kennedy Center is we don't have to be symmetric. Not one season doesn't have to look like another. So we have the opportunity to every year do something special and surprise our audience with something that they might not have thought would ever happen.
How do you go about growing new audiences?
I really believe you build new audiences in two ways. One is you bring new audiences to you because you do repertory that appeals to them. It is very hard to bring the Arab American audience to the Kennedy Center and try and sell them Brahms. But when you start to diversify the work you do, you start to find people who come to you because you're doing work that appeals to them and brings them to you. So our Arabesque Festival brought a tremendous number of Arab Americans here who'd never been here before. Our Country Music Festival brought many people to the Kennedy Center who'd never been here before. The way I find that out most, beyond all the computer programs, is just when they ask where the bathrooms are. And then I know we have people who have never been here before. But the other way is with education, and that's particularly for a younger audience. You build new audience by allowing people to understand art forms and not make them so mystical. And so for me, that's the second big approach. So